Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Here we are, once again deep in the swamp, hunting tales of skimwalkers and wendigos, sent in by viewers just like you. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a skimwalker story, a wendigo story, or something else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. I discovered your channel not too long ago, and was hoping I can get some help identifying the creature I saw. For some context, I own 12 acres right at the base of the Appalachian Mountains in Pennsylvania, and I often camp up in the mountains. This particular night, I was camping with two friends and my hunting beagle Judy, sometime towards the end of July in 2015. I will call my friends Robert and Aaron to conceal their identities. We headed out around noon and made our trek through my property and up the mountain. The hike often takes around 2 hours or so. Everything was going perfect until around an hour in. Judy picked up a scent and ran straight after it, howling all the way, disobeying my commands to return. This was the first time he's done this since I was training him. Robert, Aaron, and I pursued Judy through the woods, going off on her intended path, and to an area I've never been before. All of us came into a clearing and saw Judy standing completely still, staring at something. I hurried over and saw a doe ripped into two next to a small stream. All of us were very surprised to see this and slightly disgusted, as we've all been hunting buddies for about 15 years and have never seen any animals as mutilated as this deer was. We chalked it up to a black bear, but were still on edge. Judy was extremely aware, cautious, and scared the entire time. He didn't howl once after seeing the deer, and I assumed he picked up a stronger, or new scent. I've never seen him act like this in the woods, not even after being face to face with a coyote. We started to work our way back to the normal hiking route, and heard what sounded like bipedal footsteps behind us, keeping about 100 yard distance. I forgot to mention, I always carry when I'm in the wilderness. You can never be too safe, and I do urge everybody to carry, or at least have some sort of weapon with them while they're out there. I decided it was time to take my Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum out of its holster and stay on guard while we continued our hike. The footsteps eventually faded as we were on the regular hiking route again. All of us made it to my camping spot, but the hike took a ridiculous long 4 hours. Judy was calmed at this point, but obviously still spooked. We set up our tents. Robert and Aaron shared a tent because someone had to carry the beer with them, and neither Aaron nor I wanted the extra weight. We got a fire going, and I cooked up some baked beans. By the time we were finished eating, chatting, and having a few drinks, it was getting dark. We all decided it was time for bed because we had a long hike ahead of us in the morning. Now that I think of it, I wasn't even thinking about the incident with the deer earlier, even though I should have been. I woke up sometime around 2 a.m. to what sounded like a very heavy footstep outside my tent. Judy was standing up and kept completely still, looking at me as if to warn me to stay still and to stay very quiet. There were no other sounds in the forest, and it smelled like rotting meat. Not even the chirps of crickets were present with this awful smell. A few minutes later, I could hear Robert and Aaron in the next tent whispering. I heard someone get out of the tent, and they were telling me to stop messing around with them. It was 2 a.m., and they were trying to sleep. As I heard the rustling of the tent end, I heard Aaron say, "Holy crap, what the F is that thing?" I quickly unzipped my tent, jumped out as Robert jumped out of their tent as well. Judy did not move from his spot in the tent, and I saw this gray creature peering at us from behind a tree. That thing must have been between 9 and 10 feet tall with antlers and some weird concave eye sockets. It wore this creepy thin smile. Its eyes had almost a reddish glow to them. I rushed back in my tent, grabbed my .357, and I ran back out and shot 3 rounds, center mass. We all heard the most ear-piercing scream any of us have ever heard. It ran off into the woods as Judy whined and hid in one of the corners of the tent. Robert looked at me with an expression of pure terror. Aaron was already packing up our things. Shortly after, we packed up, as Aaron did, we got this realization. Now, none of us had ever seen or heard of such a vile creature in these forests. We packed up our camp in record time. I had to carry Judy because he was still whining and refused to move. We were paranoid beyond belief and practically ran down the mountain. We could hear this creature following us soon after we departed our camp, though. I blindly fired 3 rounds to the dark behind us with one hand, as I had Judy in the other. I had to reload and Aaron held Judy. I emptied 6 rounds to the forest after my reload. I heard this creature screech one more time, just as an ear-piercing and painful scream as the first we originally heard. We all made it down in record time with only a few slips and falls. It took us a total of about an hour and a half when we originally woke up to make it back to my house. We were all very shook up and talked about it often with each other, but nobody else. Judy took it the worst. As Robert, Aaron, and I continued to hunt and spend time in the wilderness, Judy will no longer enter the woods anywhere and rarely howls and barks now. Thank you for giving me the platform to share my story, and I hope that someone can help me identify the creature we saw that terrifying night. These are all my mom's stories, from when she was young to her early 50s. When my mom was young, she lived on the border between the towns of Calistoga and Napa, nestled on the base of a large hill. Her house connected to the main highway by a long, winding driveway and was built directly on an old Native American campsite. We know this from local history and the many obsidian arrowheads we have found scattered in the creek bed along the driveway and in the dirt in the backyard. The backyard had a pool, then a small lawn, which trailed off into the wild, dense hillside. My mom, who was a bit of a tomboy, loved to explore up in the hills with her 2 older brothers. She recalls one time while they were walking up in the hills, she was around 10 or 11 at the time, when they started hearing their mother's voice. But something was honestly off about it. First of all, it was coming from deep within the woods, and secondly, it was oddly slow, and the words sounded forced. And most unnerving of all, it was calling for them each by name to come to the woods. It wanted them to meet at the Bear Cave. This is what they called a small cave up in the hills, one far from where they were. She and her brothers immediately turned back, thankfully. They weren't that far from her house, so they were able to get back safely. She tells me this happened, voices calling to her, and it sounded like her mom or dad or brothers, as well as hearing other sounds that she described as a growl, like if a bear and a cow had a baby and it got mad. Now, skip forward around 40 years. My mom has turned the place into an inn after my grandmother died. The first sign that something weird was happening was when she found a dead buck in the backyard. Now, living in the hills, there were a lot of deer, and a couple dead does and bucks would happen around sometimes. But the buck looked like it had been ripped apart. The flesh was scattered everywhere in the pool, on the pool deck, and in the grass. But what my mom thought was odd was the fact that only the heart and stomach were missing. Nothing else, just a torn into stomach and a missing heart. The last story I've heard happened a couple of months ago. She was outside with our Labrador, cleaning up around the pool. I think it was around twilight, and the sun was nearly set. She suddenly starts hearing the same bear-cow cry up in the hills. It's getting louder and louder, and so is the lab's barking. Our lab, usually a gigantic sweetheart, is going ballistic for some reason. She's barking and growling as loud as she can, nearly drowning out the cries. My mom immediately takes her inside and locks the doors. The cries stopped after an hour, but she was thoroughly shaken up. So far, these are the only stories she's told me about, but she says that she definitely has more. She still doesn't let my brother and I up into the hills, though she claims the noises and deer were only mountain lions, and the voices were just her young imagination. Personally, I believe it was a Wendigo. I'm a 30-year-old male and have dealt with strange encounters all my life, ranging from a basic kidnapping attempt to a haunting/demonic presence that felt like it would bring an entire house down on top of me. My wife and friends have always called me things like a magnet for trouble or a lightning rod for the weird, which is fair seeing as these kinds of people and situations do seem to be drawn to me, and those who are close to me normally notice. I usually just listen to stories on YouTube, but I was goaded by my best friend into contributing some of my own experiences. I decided to start with one of my personal favorites. Around the ages of 18 and 19, I liked to go camping and hiking every so often. Living in the northwestern US did nothing to put me off from doing so. In fact, I kind of found the cold, damp dreariness calming in a weird sort of way. Spending a decent amount of time outdoors, I would occasionally meet like-minded individuals, some of them Native American. I grew somewhat close with a small group of Native guys around my age, possibly 3 or 4 years older than I, and after running with them a few times, they took notice of how respectful of my surroundings I was. Or at least, that I was not an entitled glamper. I guess this gave them enough reason to invite me to join them on one of their outings. Let's call them Wolf, Hawk, Bear, and Ted to make things easier. I met up with them at the edge of the forest before sunrise. We all shared the preference of getting an early start, as well as getting as far from civilization as we could within reason. We hiked between 30 to 60 minutes before we found a decently wide, flat area and set up our camp. The remainder of the day was spent drinking lightly, sharing past experiences, identifying bird calls, and listening to some of their cultural stories and legends. It was well after sunset when the event occurred. Wolf got up to answer a call of nature and wandered off through the trees. After he was out of sight, I decided that I might as well take care of my own burden, having hoped that it could have waited till morning, but up until then, I made sure to let the rest of them know that I was going number two, so they wouldn't worry if I was gone for longer than our other companion. I ventured out further than I would have if I needed to take a leak, not wanting them to stumble upon me in the middle of my business. I had just done my belt up and turned to return to our campsite when I thought I heard something in the distance. I frowned, tilting my head and straining my ears to see if I could catch whatever it was again.
"Help!"
someone cried out. It was soft, so I couldn't exactly tell what direction it was coming from, but it did sound like a man's voice.
Hello?
I called back, eager to lend a hand to anyone who was lost or possibly injured.
Help!
The voice repeated, a little closer and hoarser now. I took a few steps in the direction I thought the voice might be coming from, sweeping my flashlight around the area.
Are you lost?
I shouted into the darkness.
Lost,
came the reply, even closer than before. I found it a little strange that they responded with one word, but maybe I had missed the rest, or maybe they didn't know English very well. Either way, that was enough for me to take a few quick, determined steps toward the voice. But I was stopped dead in my tracks by the next thing I heard.
I'm lost,
it shrieked, drawing out the word in that. Something that sounded so inhuman. It was like a human yelling mixed with the high-pitched scream of a deer or an elk. I felt goosebumps rise wherever they could as I muttered to myself, "What the hell?" I took a couple more slow steps, my flashlight darting from place to place until I heard twigs and brush being disturbed in the direction of our campsite. I whipped around while drawing my hunting knife to be met with the sight of Wolf wearing a stern but concerned expression. I relaxed and sighed in relief before trying to explain about the voice I heard and how we should go out and see who or what is out there. He just grabbed my upper arm and stoically began dragging me back through the trees. I didn't resist, but I kept trying to make a case for at least attempting to rescue the person out in the woods. His response was chilling.
"I heard them too. Ain't no person out there, man," he mumbled.
I was too dumbstruck to say anything else while we got back to the rest of the group. Once within sight, they began clapping and hooting a little, raising their cans of beer as they shared a laugh.
"Wendigo almost got the white boy, did he?" Bear asked.
Wolf responded by shaking his head, his eyes widening as he exhaled with his cheeks slightly puffed up in a "that was too close" kind of way. At this point, I'm sure it was one of their friends helping them play a prank on me, so I called them out on it. They laughed a little more and Hawk said,
"Look around, we're all here."
It was true that the four of them weren't really social with many others, but I was convinced that wasn't proof enough. What happened next was we had been talking about this for nearly half an hour before they all froze, then sprung into action, dismantling and packing up their camp faster than I'd ever seen, almost as if it were a sport, as if they were some sort of star athletes. I tried asking what the hell was going on, but all I got was Hawk hissing, "Listen!" Not even slowing down in what he was doing. I stood still and tried to tune out all the rustling, thumping, and clanking as best as I could. Eventually, my ears picked up on something. It was a kind of deep chittering or clicking, similar to the sound of predator, coming from the same direction I had gone to use the facilities earlier. I was only standing there for a few seconds before I snapped out of it by Bear handing me a length of rope with a D-link at the end. "Hook it onto your belt. Can't afford to get separated," he said, his eyes focused on the brush past me. I took it and did as he said, following them to the side of the camp closest to the way back to our cars before they threw a couple of buckets of dirt over the fire. As soon as it was smothered, Wolf said we needed to get out of the forest as fast as possible. We didn't run, being hooked together and all, but we walked quickly and half-jogged the whole way, turning what had been around a 45-minute journey into a 20-minute one. The mood seemed to lighten up immediately after we emerged from the forest, and the rest of them laughing and catching their breath as we had made it to our cars. We had just come out of some perilous ordeal, me still feeling a little lost at what had just happened. We set up camp again on the grass near our cars, no fire this time, just lanterns. Once we were all settled, I asked Wolf if they really thought Wendigos were real, and if there had actually been one there hunting me. They all went quiet, and he explained,
"The truth is, we don't know exactly what it is," he said with a shrug. "All we know is that they use the voices of people or animals to lure their prey. Then," he clapped his hands, "they ambush it."
I felt a bit queasy, wondering how close I had been to being attacked. A new thought came to mind. I get that it calls for help if it knows people are around, but what was the one noises before we packed up? He looked at me grimly.
"That's how they communicate with each other."
I shuddered, further disturbed by the thought of there being more than one of those things stalking me. We spent the rest of the evening trying to recover what little good vibes were still to be had that weekend, talking about how we would circle around to a far part of the woods to ensure a good distance between us and those things. Unfortunately, our spirits were severely dampened by yet another cry from the woods.
"Why won't you help me?"
It screamed, jarring us all out of our mirth and forcing us all to lock our eyes in the tree line. They followed us here, Bear quipped before turning to look at me.
I guess they have a taste for white meat, he said with a grin.
"Don't worry," Wolf said quietly, gesturing to our surroundings. "There's no cover here. They won't leave the forest."
My eyes didn't leave the trees.
"Are you sure?"
I asked. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Wolf nod his head to the side slightly.
"Pretty sure," he replied,
a hint of doubt in his voice. Needless to say, I slept in my car that night. In July of 2008, I believe it was sometime around the 30th, Me and my buddy drove to Manitoba in order to pick up some medicines for an upcoming sweat. So we get to the west of Portage La Prairie, and my buddy pulls into a gas station because he has to use the bathroom. I begin to doze off, when all of a sudden, I feel two cold and bony hands wrap around my throat. The smell of decay fills my nostrils and it makes my eyes water. I have been hunting quite a lot, and I, of course, have stumbled upon animal carcasses rotting. But that is a smell I would readily prefer over the smell that this creature emitted. I can't move my head as I try to see what is on top of me. I can feel tears starting to run down my face as black dots started to dance in front of my eyes. Bang, bang, bang. The noises are all I hear, and I look over at the window of the truck and see my buddy smashing his hands against the window. He looks petrified and keeps screaming a word over and over, but I can't hear what it is over the ringing in my ears. I read his lips and my blood runs cold. He is screaming the word, Wendigo. I think back to when I was a little kid and I had stayed out past sundown on a bitter winter evening with my father and his waiting outside. He has scared yet stern look on his face and says, "You better get inside the house, boy. There are man-eaters in these woods." For years, I pester him over and over about what he was talking about, and that's when he finally tells me about the Wendigo, the ravenous spirits that look to possess weak-willed or starving people. They are cannibals, born from the harsh circumstances of the great winters that have occurred. I remember my father said all you need to do is blow a puff of air at it, and if you are pure and of strong intentions, then it will vanish in search of its next meal. However, if you are a greedy and a weak-willed person, it will possess you and make you into one of them. You will constantly crave meat, but only the flesh of man will satiate your stomach, and a craving stuck in your mind. I turn slightly towards the beast and puff a breath in its direction. All of a sudden, the horrid smell of decay vanishes and the hands disappear. I feel an overwhelming urge to vomit. I want to get whatever was around my throat out of it. But I restrain myself. My buddy hops into the truck. We are both silent as we drive on. Our breaths are the only sounds to break up the silence. We drive for around 10 minutes before my buddy shouts, "Dude, what the hell?" He slams on the brakes and screeches to a halt and almost collides with the car in front of us. The car turns around and we see what is causing the sudden blockage in traffic. A Greyhound bus is pulled over to the side, and a bunch of shaken-looking people are standing beside it. Their gazes can only be described as a thousand-yard stare. RCMP cruisers surround the bus. The red and blue lights dance on our windows. My buddy turns around, swearing at the inconvenience, and we drive back to a shady hotel we had passed earlier. The whole way there, I'm sitting motionlessly. A sense of dread is ever present in my gut as we arrive at the hotel. We check in and start putting our stuff down when my buddy turns on the news. It's a pretty crappy television, but soon enough we see breaking news flash across the screen, and I stop what I'm doing. The news reporter looks shaken as she rattles off, "One adult male is confirmed to be dead in what is being called a frenzied knife attack. We are getting multiple reports of the suspect consuming parts of the male's body. The police have not commented any further." I look over to my buddy, and he has gone ashen white. He looks over at me and says, in a withdrawn voice, "I guess the Wendigo needed to be fed." The victim was Tim McLean. He was brutally murdered on Greyhound bus number 1170 by a man named Vince Lee, who was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. He told investigators that God told him to kill Tim. Tim McLean was sleeping as Vince stabbed him and was awoken to a crazed Vince standing over him holding a hunting knife. Tim was stabbed over 60 times and dismembered. Vince consumed parts of his head and actually stuffed chunks of Tim into his pockets. Want to know the best part? Vince Lee was released with a new name and no criminal record. He was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic and was excused from his actions. So, all of the Americans that complain about their justice system all the time, be thankful that they at least give out appropriate sentences for individuals like these. To this day, I wonder if Tim could see the crazed Wendigo staring back at him as he looked into his killer's eyes, begging for mercy. I don't know whether this story will be scary to anyone reading this or not, but those I've told think it's interesting enough for them to repeat the stories to others. I am a 17-year-old male currently living in Hawaii. Lucky me. But as a child, I was raised in a Christian home in a rural part of Nevada. For as long as I can remember, I have had a fascination with the unexplained and paranormal. Unlike my Christian family, I do not believe in anything that I cannot see myself. Thus, up until recently, I only thought of the supernatural as a very ancient superstition. Nothing to be afraid of or concerned about, right? But like anyone else, I like a good ghost story. Some of the horrific stories that my friends would tell me would keep me up at night, not in fear, but in curiosity. I would always wonder what the meaning behind the phantom's actions would be, or even if there would be any reason behind it at all. If a shadowy figure stood across from you down the hall, what would he be trying to accomplish? Scare you and feed off your fear? Call out to you and help it pass over? Or is it doing that for no reason at all? This is what I was interested in. Not so much the terror aspect of it. In my free time, I would usually and still do watch YouTube videos about the paranormal, namely Swamp Dweller and Darkness Prevails. My parents, being Christian, were greatly concerned about this interest and afraid that I would invite something into our house or our lives. I didn't believe that, thus I continued my routine. About 4 years ago, when I still lived in my Nevada home, my 10-year-old sister, who we'll call Sarah for the sake of the story, was scared and asked if she could sleep with me in my bed. This was nothing out of the usual. Sarah was still afraid of the dark, and she believed that if she slept with me, nothing would happen, or if something did happen, she'd feel less crazy because I'd be there to witness it. Like the older brother I am, I allowed her to sleep with me. Sometime later, we got into an argument about something I don't remember. I ended up feeling guilty and apologized about the fight, but Sarah decided to sleep in her own room despite me. I saw her leave, and the way my bed was positioned, couldn't see her after she had stepped out of my room. 10 seconds after Sarah left, she sprinted back into my room, looking as pale as a ghost, leaped onto my bed, hid under my sheets, and latched onto me with a grip that I had never felt before. She began crying, but it wasn't her normal cry. It sounded like there was force behind her cry, as if she wanted to cry as loud and as long as she could but couldn't out of fear of being heard by someone or something. Her breathing was rapid, irregular, and shallow as well, as if she was suffocating or drowning and reaching for air. I asked her what was wrong, but she never answered. I thought someone was in the house, so I wanted to get up and check. I moved only an inch before Sarah held me even tighter and cried, "Don't go, please don't." I laid back down and tried to explain, but she talked over me and repeated this about 10 more times before I assured her that I'll stay here until she calms down. After about 15 minutes, Sarah was calm enough to talk, but now she was shaking. I asked if she was alright to explain what had happened. Through tears, she explained the horror. When she had stepped out of my room, she saw someone standing in the room directly in front of her. The room was my older brother's, who had moved out 7 years prior. Sarah and I always seen things inside that room through the corner of our eyes, whether it be day or night, but we never looked, and we never really thought much about it, because we thought it was just our imagination, you know? The figure kind of looked like my father, and it stood just enough inside the doorway for her to see its figure. It even appeared to have the same clothes as my dad on. Its body was facing her. Its head was facing 90 degrees to her left, away from her. Once she had seen it, she realized that my father was at work, driving a semi-truck to Boise, Idaho, for one of his regular runs. There were no other males beside me that were living in that house. When she had realized these things, the figure slowly turned its head toward my sister, and while doing so, changed from my father's appearance into what she thinks was its own appearance. In Sarah's words, "Its hair was frizzy and had black and red streaks. Its eyes were glowing red. It had no nose, its skin was palish blue, and you could see the veins, which were tar black. He was extremely tall and slender, with long, bony arms reaching past his knees. His fingers had thick, long, and sharp nails that were stained with a black substance. It wasn't dripping off of its nails, it was, like, crusted on. It stood there extremely straight and stiff, just stared at me.
I didn't say anything or make a sound, and I was filled with this paralyzing fear. Seeing this, she wanted to run to my parents' room down the hall, but she feared that she might not make it before this thing caught her. So she quickly looked behind her to see if my door was still open, and she dashed into my room. When she looked back, the figure was 2 feet closer to her, still retaining the same posture and unwavering stare. As soon as she saw this, she turned and bolted into my room. To her, those few steps into my room seemed like a mile. She felt to get closer and closer each step she took, but right as she set foot in my room, she felt it stop and or leave, but she never looked back to check. Then she launched herself onto my bed and hid, latching onto me. Once she had finished telling me everything, I wanted to believe that it was true and see it for myself, but somehow I knew it wouldn't be there now. I thought about telling our parents about this, but who would believe it? I knew they wouldn't believe. No parent ever does or wants to when this sort of thing happens. "You just had a nightmare," they would say, or "it was just your imagination." Thinking about their response got me doubting in Sarah's story, but the utter terror and exhausted look that my sister had made, it made me dismiss my doubts. Eventually, we decided to tell our parents. I went first, of course, with her tightly hanging on behind me. When I left my room, I didn't see the figure, which I knew was going to happen and made me feel relieved and bummed at the same time. Upon reaching our parents' room and telling them about it, they said the exact things I predicted. My sister, once hearing their response, snapped and began yelling through sobs to them. "What was I thinking? I should have never told you. You never would have believed, unless you saw what I saw. I thought by telling you, you would comfort me, but instead, you're sweeping it under the rug and telling me that I'm crazy." Sarah is a sweet and respectful girl. She never raised her voice at her parents, even if she wanted to. So this caught our parents' attention and fully woke them up. They realized through this outburst and my account of the event that this was indeed true. My mom called a pastor. It was around 12:51 a.m. to come bless our house. The pastor came, prayed, burned incense and other rituals to cleanse our house. I didn't believe any of this worked, but it made my sister feel a little more at ease, so that made me feel better. My parents and Sarah never told anyone of this, still believing it could be some imagination, and I only told a few close friends when they would sleep over. Fortunately, we moved 2 years later to Hawaii, leaving that thing behind. Hopefully, anyway. Although other things such as bowls falling out of the cabinets by themselves or random but ghastly screams happening, we don't think anything else has occurred. I thought that it could be a Wendigo. After this event, I just wanted to know what it was, so I searched online and Wendigo, Rake, or Skinwalker seemed to be the best likely things. If you know what this could be, please let me know, and thank you for sharing my story on your show. Thanks for listening to these creepy Skinwalker and Wendigo stories. These were sent in by viewers just like you. If you have a story you would like to share in a future video, whether it's a Wendigo, Skinwalker, Dogman, or anything else, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. If you enjoyed these stories, please hit that like button, as it helps me out a ton. The more likes this video gets, the more YouTube promotes it to fresh new eyes, and we can always use new members of the Swamp. If you're new to the Swamp, why not join us? Hit the subscribe button, turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. Thanks as always, guys, for listening to these stories and supporting the Swamp. If you're not aware yet, you can download your favorite scary stories from the Swamp on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and almost every other major podcasting platform. You can download them and bring them wherever you want. It'll save you a lot on that mobile data. Thank you guys again. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video. Oh, by the way, today's code word, if you made it all the way to the end, is Sunshine Addiction. Comment that down below so I know you made it to the end, and to confuse everybody else who didn't, tally-ho.